Insiders, an ASI Media podcast that covers the topics that matter most to the promotional products industry. I'm CJ Mitica, and today we're discussing your biggest pet peeves with clients. I'm joined by Amy Klein, an industry veteran of 25 plus years and an authorized dealer with Kayser & Blair, to go over the biggest issues based on responses by our listeners and discuss the ideas and solutions that will lead to more productive client interactions. So Amy, thank you again for joining us today. Just said you've been in the industry over 25 years now. Is it fair to say that you've seen it all, or you've seen most of it?
I don't think you can ever see it all. I think something new happens every day, but I've seen my fair share. So there's not a whole lot of things that surprise me anymore.
Oh, good. So we're glad to have your experienced voice and your insights here today. Like I said, we're discussing distributor pet peeves with clients, and here's how it's going to work. So a couple weeks ago, we emailed our listeners, our readers, and asked them a simple question: what's your number one pet peeve with clients? You let us know. They sent a lot of responses, and it definitely fell into a few common topics and few common issues, and those are the ones that we're going to be discussing today. So throughout this podcast, we're gonna go over the biggest issues. I'm gonna read a couple of the responses that we got from our readers, and then Amy here is gonna talk about ways to deal with that. Maybe some ideas, solutions, workarounds, and avenues to head those issues off and have better client interactions. And Amy, I'm curious. So before we get to those topics, what's your number one client pet peeve? And is it something we're going to discuss today, or is it something completely different?
Well, I'm probably going to thwart the system a little bit. I don't have pet peeves with my clients. My clients are my partners. They're my buddies. They're my lifeblood of my business. And so if there's issues coming up, I really try to look at it as a way to improve my business, to improve our relationship. Obviously, that indicates that there's a disconnect somewhere. So I do my best to try to dive into the issue a little bit more and solve it rather than look at it as a pet peeve.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a really good point, and maybe something just to mention before we get started. The idea is not for distributors to have this sort of adversarial relationship with clients, right? Like you said, your partners, you're working together. Many distributors consider their clients to be friends and family. They have really close bonds. That doesn't mean that friends and family can't get on your nerves or do things that make your life difficult. But I think it's a good point, Amy. We're going to talk about these issues today. These are things that you can work on. Don't just let them continue to happen. Engage in conversation, right? To fix these issues.
It's a way to dialogue. It's obviously, they're here, you're here. How are you going to get everybody on the same page? How are you going to make them happy and get the suppliers happy? We're the go-between in our industry. We ourselves don't control very much. Our clients control the deadlines. They control the information. Our suppliers control their production times. They control their ship dates. So it's our job to kind of go through both sides with our clients. And this is a good way to facilitate communication with both of them.
So just a reminder for our viewers who are listeners or who are joining us live, feel free to chime in with your own thoughts. If you have your own pet peeves you want to mention, we'll gladly talk about them. If you have questions for Amy, she'll be happy to answer them. You can do that all throughout the podcast today. So, all right, we're going to get started, and we're going to start with the first pet peeve, and this one and all of them I think are going to be common for people in our industry. The number one, the first pet peeve we want to talk about today are rush issues. These are very familiar for distributors. I'm going to read a couple of the responses right now. The first one is from is a distributor saying, "Client, I just sent you a request. I need the info in half an hour for a meeting. Can you please send it now?" I think that's a common one. Amy, would you say so?
It's not uncommon. Yeah. Most of my clients know when I'm in the office, and when I'm not, I'm usually here. If I'm not, I'm on my cell phone, and I can get back to them right away. In this instance, my clients would text me and just say, but it's a chance to showcase your magic wand. How much information do you have in your back pocket? What distributors, or excuse me, what suppliers do you work with that you know have a 24-hour rush, that you know have a 48-hour rush policy? Who are your go-to people? So I have a bunch of things in my back pocket that I can pull out in 10 minutes, but I always try to put a caveat on there. Hey, look, you only gave me half an hour. These are my initial thoughts right off the top of my head. If you can give me, you know, a little bit more time, I can flesh it out a little bit more for you, but try to be as responsive as I can for them. Just depends on how much information they need from me.
And just one more response from our readers here, you know, again, asking about their number one pet peeve, telling us how they need the order immediately, then not picking up for 5 days. So the rush issues, Amy, again, I think most distributors are common with, are familiar with this issue. To me, it's like it's a fine line where distributors, they want to be there and be available for their customers, you know, and help out at a moment's notice. But I think obviously you want time to do your job properly, to do the best job for your clients.
Absolutely. I think this speaks to a matter of respect on both sides, right? I want to work with clients that respect me, respect my time, and don't send me chasing down crazy purple squirrels for them. You know, if they say they need it on a certain amount of time, I trust that they would pick it up on time, or that they would actually need it on time. They know most of the time that if they tell me they have an event on Friday, I'm going to shoot to have it there Thursday anyway, to give a little bit of extra time. But if I had a client that did that time after time after time, we might have to have a conversation. Like, you've asked me to do this for you 4 or 5 times now, and you haven't picked up till later. How can we better work together so that you're not paying rush fees and we're not looking at expedited, you know, freight or things like that? And maybe you have more options if you give me a little bit more time.
So when should, I guess, distributors address this issue? Should they set the expectations from the start before they start working with clients about how quickly they can respond and get information? Or is it better to maybe just not, you know, not mention it, and then if it happens, then address it? What do you think?
Well, I start every project. It doesn't matter if it's a pen or if it's, you know, a multiple piece dropship program. When do you need it? Who's in the audience? What are your expectations? Just so I can research things for them the best way, right? If they don't give me the full scope of information, how am I going to give them all the options that are absolutely possible for them? So I head it off right in the very beginning. And if they don't give me the need date right ahead of time at the very beginning, it kind of thwarts that issue most of the time anyway. If they tell you, well, I don't have an event, I just need it as quickly as possible, then that allows me to set better expectations with them and say, you know, standard lead time is 2 weeks, and then we have 3 days of transit time, so you can expect to get it here. And I think they like knowing when to receive it so they can plan on their end too, rather than them waiting and not knowing or trying to manage the process on their end with no information, I guess, from our supplier side.
At least speaking for you, what generally, like, what percentage of clients, like, do want that sort of that immediate sort of need for information or products? Is it a small percentage? Is it a larger percentage? Just maybe from your experience,
like, how many of my clients need a rush?
Like, I would say do a large portion of clients tend to fall into these rush habits, or you think it's just a small percentage of clients who are the ones always pushing to get things last minute?
I have a couple clients that always push for a rush because they're event planners. And so, you know, they're not event planners, but for their company, they plan these events. And so their salespeople in the field will just say, oh my gosh, I have an event next week and now I need swag. And so they're like, I told you to stop doing this, you know, so they're frustrated with their sales team. So I try to help them a little bit more. And if it comes up a lot, I try to come up with strategies for them. Like, okay, you know, Joe out in the field is going to not give you enough time. Should we set aside like one box of pens and a box of journals, so he has something right away, so you're not paying rush fees? Is there something that you commonly order for these events and things like that, that we can work on to mitigate this? Once they pay those freight fees a couple times, they generally on their own want to be a little bit more proactive and give me more time.
Yeah. And last question just about on this subject. Have you seen a change at all in the past couple of years with supply chain issues and just inventory, like availability being hit or miss. Has that changed at all? This push for rush that I think was very prevalent prior to all this.
Yeah, I think pre-pandemic, I got a lot more requests actually for rushes. People just expected it. It became the norm. My magic wand had so much juice. They were just like, Amy can always make it happen. It's fine. And I'm like, my magic wand only has so much juice. But then when the pandemic happened and inventory became quite an issue for a lot of our supplier partners, I strategized with my clients and they saw the benefit of pre-planning and getting those things ahead of time. And so we would do annual or even quarterly meetings to discuss events they had or initiatives coming up and then plan a little bit further in advance so their money went farther. Now that inventory is back in stock and things are actually moving a little bit better, I think, through the last year or two, I'm seeing a little bit more rush requests again because they know the stock's there. But I think the economy right now is a little bit tighter, so people are watching that dollar a little bit more. I make sure that I include a freight quote and a response date that's based on too, so they know if they don't get back to me today, if we get the order tomorrow, we may have to ship UPS 3-day, which means that freight's going to go up. My costs don't go up, but the freight goes up, so that usually gets them to get back to me too, which I know was with somebody else's pet peeve about clients not getting back to you.
And I think actually that's the very next one, I believe. So that was a really good segue. So the second pet peeve we're going to discuss is clients being unresponsive. This one definitely bothers people. So here's the first response. It goes, whether it's a rush order that you need one answer to or just a simple proof, the customer being non-responsive is a pain in the neck. This person mentions one time already, or when you responded, that respond on Thursday and got an answer by Monday. By Wednesday, no response. So that is a common pet peeve. And I'll read the other response as well about clients being unresponsive. Again, what's your pet peeve? Easy, spending a lot of time on long, complicated quotes and then getting ghosted. Especially when it's someone I know, that really gets my goat. I would say definitely if it's someone you know, that makes it even worse. For you, Amy, I mean, is it how common is this issue in terms of your clients not responding within the timeframes that you need to get the job done properly?
It's really not very often because I set those expectations at the very beginning. You know, when I get the information for the order, the project, whatever they need. I'll let them know, okay, well, we have plenty of time. You know, if it's 4 weeks out, that's fine. And they know that they don't have to get back to me the same day. But, you know, if it's important for them, it's important for me to be responsive for them. But it's also, I try to put the ball in their court as often as possible and say, okay, this is the information. This is when I need an answer back from you. If we get an answer back tomorrow, it moves the ship date out, you know, and I kind of lay it out for them. So they have all the information on their side. And sometimes, you know, every once in a while I'll have a client that doesn't get back to me and that's okay. We just work on the next one together. You know, I try not to take it too personal. I don't know what's happening on their end. Maybe they're having staff issues. Maybe they have something come up with the CEO that I didn't know about. Maybe they had a directional change. You know, I want to be their partner, not their pesky nitpicker out there bugging them. But they do know that if they don't get back to me, there's nothing I can do. My hands are tied, but I do try to let them know that I'm here to be a partner for you and I want to go to work for you. Just let me know. Give me the nod. Give me an okay. Give me a text. Give me something. And then I'll keep the ball rolling for you. So
I really like that idea of sort of laying out and explaining, you know, what happens if the client doesn't respond in time. You know, this will happen with the ship date. This may happen with the cost or inventory, because I think it lays out the consequences, right? I think clients will just assume, oh, whenever I get back, then the distributor will still be able to make it all happen in time. So I like that little added layer to it.
Yeah, thanks. It's something I've learned over time, because you have to manage kids, you have to manage employees, you have to manage clients too, right? It's our job to make sure that the project gets done. And sometimes I don't think our clients realize what all our distributors, me and all my buddies out there, are doing for them on their behalf, because it's kind of like the duck, you know, we're floating along, you see this smooth, calm thing, but underneath we're paddling, you know, like nobody's business. So we don't often show them, you know, how much we're doing behind the scenes. But I think showing them a little bit more what goes on underneath helps them help us be a better partner for them. So, and it also builds a stronger relationship over time.
Yeah, and definitely with these first two pet peeves and with a couple of the others as well, I think the broader theme is building as much time as possible, right? Because I feel like when you're cutting it close and like you're expecting all these things, all these dominoes to fall perfectly, it just gets magnified when there's not a lot of time. Is that pretty fair to say?
Yes, it can get catastrophic for sure. I have plan A, B, and C almost all the time. If this one doesn't happen, then I'm going to go over here, or, you know, we may have to work on this. And I'm always kind of thinking, what may happen if this point isn't hit, or, you know, things like that. But, you know, when you've been doing it for that long, you have your good supplier partners, you know, if I don't get that proof by 2 o'clock, I know this vendor isn't going to get it today. You know, understanding your vendor or supplier partners too is really important. You know, I don't want to be a bee in their bonnet, but sometimes I'm going to have to be like, I need this proof right away. Otherwise I know you're not going to ship it on time.
definitely aligning yourself with the right vendors is crucial. I think actually it does tie into this next pet peeve that we're going to talk about, and that's clients beating up distributors on price, a common refrain. So here's a couple of responses again from our readers. Number one, client pet peeve: we spend a lot of time proposing and coming up with ideas, and then at the end, it's all about the pricing, comparing with online vendors. Yes, it's always the online vendors with their dirt cheap products that are being blamed. Let's move on to the next response here. This is a long one, so I'll summarize. My boss has been delivering orders to some customers for over 25 years, and they refuse to pay for shipping. So my boss goes out of his way to deliver and save them thousands of dollars, but they don't appreciate it. They won't pay on time, they bully us for lower pricing, and they threaten to go elsewhere. This, more than the other things, burns me up. The price issue is definitely one that's mentioned a lot in our industry. It's always sort of presented as this price versus service and quality sort of things. Like, you can't have all three. How do you approach it, Amy, especially clients who do have a budget, who do want the best price possible?
A couple of different ways. Sometimes I don't want to be my client's only vendor, because I think sometimes when they work with someone else, they realize how much I do for them. So price isn't so much of an issue for them, because they wind up spending more in freight, more, oh my gosh, it didn't arrive on time, now I look like a fool, or they had to pick something else. And every once in a while, I'll get a new client that'll say, well, I can get it online for this price. I said, well, yes, you can. But they didn't do the mockups. They didn't find the price for, or the product for you. They didn't call to make sure the inventory was there. They didn't do all of these things for you. They don't babysit it for you. They're not going to send you the tracking. They're not going to make sure UPS reimburses you if it's not delivered by the delivery date. Like, all these things that go into this that you're not paying anything extra for. You're just paying the list price that we see on the website there. So, and if somebody's going to constantly beat me up on price, they don't see the value that I bring to the table, and I may not be their best resource. But it also, what I do is say, okay, well, what's your budget? Is your budget $500? Then I try to find products maybe that have a lower setup price or setup cost, yeah, so they can spend more on the item, or that are shipped from a location that's closer to where they are, so the freight's less, so the overall budget is still kept, but they can have a little bit more expensive of an item. And sometimes we know that the same item is sold at four different vendors and we get special pricing with this one. So maybe we'll go over to this guy over here so we can offer our clients a better price too. So,
yeah, I think that's a great point. Like, it's just because they can find it cheaper for elsewhere, it doesn't mean that you are ruled out of the conversation. There are things you can do to get it within the ballpark of the pricing. But I guess, maybe bottom line is, it's not all about pricing. It's about the other things as well, right?
Well, there's a difference between price and cost, 100%. The price is what you see, the top line, but by the time you get all the fees and all of everything attached to that, and, you know, if my client doesn't send me good artwork, I will have that converted vector most of the time at no charge. If you're going to go through our online people, they're going to charge you to convert that. There's a lot of things that I add in that are value that you're not going to see a price tag for in your order. And over time, actually learns to save. They learn to save money with me, and I get to know what they like. And if something goes on sale with one of my vendors, I immediately reach out and say, this one's on special this quarter. Do you need any more? And so they appreciate that as well.
Yeah, I think value is a key word, right? People appreciate value. So even if it costs a little more, if they feel they're getting great value, they're going to be happy.
Absolutely, 100%.
All right, so we got our fourth pet peeve now. This one is, I think, similar to what we mentioned earlier. It's about the distributor's time being wasted. So I'll read a couple of responses here. First one, being in the business for over 25 years, this wasn't Amy, by the way, for sending this. This was somebody.
Not me. I didn't say it.
No comment. I often get frustrated when I invest time and effort into a potential customer who ultimately doesn't make a purchase or isn't serious about buying. And our next response here, again, asking for quotes on things they have no intention of buying. And for this, so for the distributor, it's like, why am I going through all this work if you're not going to buy it? I do think it's always assumption if the distributor doesn't get the sale, oh, they weren't really serious. But maybe that's not always the case, but it certainly is the case sometimes. Are there ways, Amy, for distributors to kind of vet that out beforehand? Like, are they really interested in this product? Why do they want this information? Are there things that distributors can do to help them on the front end of this problem?
You know, I work in good faith with my clients most of the time. I don't want to beat them up. You know, if they ask me for a price on something, of course I'm going to give it to them. But if I have somebody that comes to me already with an item, they already have a quote, especially if they have a mock-up, that tells me we're either in a bid situation or they've created it online somewhere. And so I usually use that as a way to open up the conversation and say, you know, I found this product that's really similar, that's less expensive, or this one is really close to the one you did before and we don't have a setup with this company. I try to pivot it a little bit and make them talk to me a little bit more to really vet out what they're looking for, because sometimes they just will go on my website and look at four different items and they're pitching it to their boss. I don't know what's happening on their side. And the boss keeps saying no, 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 because they don't come up with their idea. But now it's a good time for me to investigate a little bit more. You know, the boss said, I need 5 items to give away at a trade show. And you've got Susie, who's brand new on the job. She doesn't know what they've given away at the last 5 trade shows. And she's giving her boss ideas. And they've completely ruled me out of the situation because Susie doesn't know that I'll find those for her. Now it's a good way to show her the value add that I have and show her additional items. And also I have an entire portfolio of items they've ordered for me before. So I'm able to bring them items that are a little bit more in line with what they've given away before. So I think sometimes you get a gut feeling about, maybe not the first time, but 2 or 3 times in a row, you get to know what they're asking for. And if they haven't bought the last 4 or 5 times, now it's time for me to ask, why? Am I not bringing the right products to you? Is the price always wrong? Is the audience different? What is it that hasn't quite clicked on the last ones that we've done? And you'd be surprised how candid people will actually be for you if you're just, hey, look, I want to learn. I want to do better for you. Just tell me what I can do better next time.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've always advocated for distributors to ask those questions, even after a successful sale. What can I do better? Because I think all that information is valuable. Are there cases where, like, if the client's asking for 10 different products, is that a case of not knowing what they want, or like, is it just like what leads to that scenario where, you know, like, they're not buying all these things, but they want to know about all these products? What does that trigger in your mind when you get that request?
Well, I actually just had this not too long ago. I have a grand opening for for one of my customers, and they wanted quotes on, I want to say, 5 or 6 different items. And I knew they were only going to pick one, but what they were doing was an analysis on their end on which one would be the best value. And they had a team. I was working with the office gal who's putting together the grand opening, and she has the office manager that she's working with. And she's also working with a team of salespeople, and each one wanted a vote. And so maybe, you know, one person wanted item A, one person wanted item B, and they needed to have that conversation on their side and petition for each person had to petition for the item that they wanted, but they needed to have the hard facts to be able to have that conversation on their side. So yes, it was a little bit more work to quote 5 or 6 items versus the one that they ended up going with, but it really helped them make a decision. And so my clients know that they can ask me for all the information so they can make the best educated decision what they want on their side. So I can appreciate what they're looking for on that side.
Yeah, I do think it ties in back to what you were saying about that follow your instinct, that gut feeling about what that customer wants. On the flip side of it, and maybe a similar dynamic, when a client orders, you know, a one-off or a couple, it's like, why bother, right? Well, maybe that actually leads to a larger order down the line. They're just trying you out. And it's like, well, so if you were just saying, oh, it's not worth my time, well, it might be worth your time later if you do a good job the first time.
Absolutely. You would be amazed at how many clients I worked with once or twice over here, and then they left that company and went to a different company. Now in their new role, they have a lot more buying power. And so because I treated them so well on a $200 order, most other distributors didn't even want to talk to them about, now I get a much larger order and have a really great relationship because I don't treat my clients any different, whether they spend $20,000 or they spend $200 with me. Their business is just as valuable. Every order is important. So,
yep. Client's time is valuable. Distributor's time is valuable. Everybody's time is valuable. Good to keep that in mind. Absolutely. So we're going to get to our last pet peeve. Actually, Amy spilled the beans on this a little bit earlier ago, so it's okay. People are used to it. The issue with bad artwork. So here's a response here. Dealing with a client's supplied camera-ready art file. Usually it's not usable. They created it on Canva, or they send over a low-res JPEG and call it camera-ready art. Another response from our readers here. Clients who try to save a few bucks by trying to do their own artwork and not using a graphic artist. So for me to get good art to start the job instead of the back and forth, I end up sending it to a graphic artist anyway to fix it and make it work. Amy, I'm sure there's countless horror stories about the bad artwork you've gotten and need to make do. How do you approach this issue?
Well, first of all, the camera-ready artwork makes me laugh because I started in this industry when you actually had camera-ready art because we had cameras that took pictures of the stuff. So that makes me laugh. I don't think most people in this industry anymore even know how the term camera-ready came out. Anyway, that makes me laugh. I just expect most of my clients not to even know what a vector art file is. If I'm lucky, I like dance in my little office over here, like, yay, you gave me the vector file. I think that's great. Most of my clients will send me PNGs. They'll send me Canva files. They'll send me all kinds of other stuff. Again, just a chance for me to educate my clients and say PNG is great for digital, but I can't print with that. If I try to print with that, it's going to come out really jagged. And I don't want that to look that way for you. Can you go back to your marketing team and just, and I give them the exact phrase, just copy this and send it to them and ask for this file. And then they'll send it. I said, you're not even going to be able to open it. Don't try. Just send me whatever it is. And they laugh and they send it to me. Or if they go back and forth, if we're going back and forth too long, I'm like, look, I have a team that'll do that. It's $25 to convert it to vector. Can I just add it to the order? And they'll say yes. Most of the time, just to get things moving, get it going. I just try to let them know. And then I always keep their artwork on file. I let them know, you're only going to pay this fee once. I will have the file forever. You never have to send it to me again. You don't have to keep track of it. You just tell me what you want it on next time and we have it. So that's a good way to retain clients as well.
Yeah, it's always interesting with artwork because it's the visual is deceiving. It's like you see it like, oh, this looks great. I this is what I definitely want. And then you send it to Amy here. And it's like, no, this is the farthest from what we actually need.
And now what I've noticed in the trend, and I wish our design partners would help us out a little bit more. This is going to be mine. Everybody's moving to hex numbers now, which looks wonderful, but our printers still use PMS ink. So we have to have those PMS numbers. That's probably been the hardest push I've had lately, is getting those on new logos to get those PMS colors, because designers are like, that's so old school. That's so 1900s. Well, we still need them. That's still the ink set that everybody uses. So trying to get artwork with PMS numbers noted, that's not CMYK, is probably one of the hardest ones. But I educate my clients and let them know this is why, what a PMS number is, how it's made, why we want that. So it prints the same exact color on every single item, whether it's a t-shirt, a pen, a notebook, whatever it is, it'll be the exact same color.
It's interesting about the PMS. I didn't actually know that there's been sort of that movement away from that. So that I learned something. Curious. So this is related, but slightly different. Just the art itself, the logo that clients want to use, maybe the image they had, like they prefer. Do you have difficulty, you know, having them move on from that if you think it's not the right look, not the right thing for their promos?
Often when I'm looking for items in the beginning, I'll ask for the logo, or I'll go to a website and look at it and see if it's got gradients. Can we make it do a one color? Do I need to search out of products that we can only print digitally? That has been wonderful from our supplier partners, because so many of them can print digital now. So yeah, it's not as restrictive as it used to be. That used to be a lot more prevalent. You know, a client would fall in love with an item and I'm like, you can't have it because you can't print it the way you want it. but we have a lot more options now. And I'm glad that our supplier partners have seen how important that is to our clients and have increased more so than new product, I think, new imprint methods the last 2 or 3 years, which has really opened the doors and solved a lot of this logo issue that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I would agree. It's been very exciting to sort of trace the evolution of decoration options. I'm sure you can remember a quarter century ago what things were like, and there's probably a lot more choices now.
100 There's 1,000 more options out there now than there used to be. And trying to explain to my clients what the difference is between digital and sublimated and transfers and screen printed and pad printed, their eyes start to cross. I'm like, see, that's why you have me. It's okay. I'll figure it all out for you.
Well, thank you, Amy, for going over these all these different issues and pet peeves with us. Just do you have any parting words for our listeners and our viewers?
I would just say, try as much as possible to smile, to work through it. It's not the end of the world. Try to use it as a problem solving way and a way to open a conversation. And I try to always pivot and think about what it is on their side and bridge things together, and it'll make lasting relationships. And those relationships oftentimes will eliminate a lot of these pet peeves, I think.
Right. Well, I agree. You know, this is a partnership, right, between distributors and clients, and you do your best to work together to solve the problem. So I hope we've helped today. Maybe, and I hope you take some good information from this and apply it to your next sale or working with your client the next time. Again, I want to thank you, Amy, for joining us today, and your insights were greatly appreciated. And thank you to our listeners and viewers for tuning in today. Have a great rest of your week.